Hello, this is Chris Yerkes reading to you from the October 22nd edition of the County Chronicle. We'll start with the first page stories. Arthur School Board, approved bond issue by Ben Crane. The Arthur Community Unit School District 305 Board of Education approved a school reconstruction bond issue, several personnel changes, and heard updates Wednesday evening on preparations for next year's relocation of the high school to Lovington. The board officially approved the issuance of reconstruction bonds, which receive an A-plus rating from a third-party company. Superintendent Shannon Cheek said architects are continuing to develop design plans for the new high school facility and that the district is exploring ways to repurpose existing security equipment and identify long-term storage options. Cheek noted that work remains underway to finalize details for next year's move, which will temporarily shift Arthur Lovington Atwood Hammond High School operations to the Lovington Grade School building. The LALAH High School principal, Stephanie Segmiller, said that letters will soon be sent to families to clarify information about the transition. There are about 300,000 rumors, so I'm excited to squash some of those, she said, adding that the high school had a successful homecoming celebration. Arthur Grade School principal, Andrew Peralta, reported that his building survived homecoming week and completed an active shooter drill, which he acknowledged is always touchy. Atwood Hammond Grade School principal Chris Foreman said that parent-teacher conferences are scheduled in the coming weeks. Auditor Adam Pulley presented the district's annual audit and told the board that nothing came to surprise during the review. Board members Ryan Nettles was designated as the district's delegate to the Illinois Association of School Boards. The board also approved a trip for 14 ALAH high school students to attend the National FFA Convention later this month. In personnel matters, the board accepted the retirement letters of ALAH high school teacher Kelly Ford, effective January 6, 2026, and administrator Amanda Romine, effective at the end of the 2025-26 school year. A leave of absence was also approved for a certified staff member at Atwood Hammond Grade School. Among non-satisfied hires, a board approved Carissa Denny as a succession manager and Samantha Binion as web manager at Atwood Hammond Grade School, along with Tiffany Reedy as Scholastic Bowl sponsor at Lovington Grade School. In extracurricular appointments, Whitney Wincop was named head softball coach and resigned as head assistant softball coach. Mark Condell was approved as volunteer assistant basketball coach. The next article is from the Tuscola City Council, Trick-or-Treat Hours Set, Irrigator Approved by David Porter. Trick-or-treat hours in Tuscola were set last Tuesday by the City Council. It will be 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. Friday, October 31st. Also approved was a Turkey Trot 5K route. The event is scheduled for November 27th. Under the consent agenda, the Council also approved a change order on the pool house renovation of $9,800 and a payment to AKRA Builders on the same project in the amount of $45,888. The council also approved replacing the center pivot irrigator at the North Water Treatment Facility. The cost is $123,900. The equipment is used to irrigate farm ground with wastewater. Drew Hole, city administrator, said the unit is 35 years old. While it might be able to be repaired, I feel like it's a risk. He said repairs might get another 5 years out of the equipment. The estimate for rehabbing the equipment was $57,000. This is the original one, he said, of the irrigator. He indicated that it has lasted nearly twice as long as expected. The council agreed to waive formal bidding on the replacement. There are not a lot of people who do this, Hole explained. It's really our only one option. The city had already budgeted $125,000 to replace the equipment. Also Tuesday, Adam Munns gave a report on the success of the most recent RC Fest held at Wimple Park. He said 212 people from 26 states participated, making it the largest remote control event in the country. Munns also used the event to raise money for Impact Life Blood Donation Center and for blood donations. He said his organization will donate $5,000 to Impact Life from the Tuscola event. Enough blood was collected to save up to 69 lives, he said. Since the RC Fest started, it has raised nearly $40,000 for Impact Life and saved up to 1,138 lives with blood donations, Munns said. His passion stems from being a blood donation recipient. This year's event may be the last one, Munns described as being on hold. Following his comments, the council applauded him. Mayor Dan Kleiss thanked Munns for the impact he's made and for the way he has conducted the event, including the cleanup afterward. We appreciate you, he said. You follow through. Kleiss also extended condolences to Treasurer Alta Long following the passing of her father-in-law. Council also heard a brief report regarding recent vandalism at Irvin Park. Doors to the concession stand and scorer's stand at the baseball diamonds were kicked in, a couple of benches were broken, and restroom signs were removed. "It gets my blood going," Kleiss said of the vandalism, "and not in a good way." He said there are cameras installed in the park now. In his written report, Hohl said that about 24 notices were sent out to property owners for various nuisance violations. He said several people have already complied or initiated compliance efforts. The remain will be forwarded for ordinance citations or other enforcement actions. Hohl also noted that the city is in negotiations with the police union. He said he will not release details of the negotiations until a tentative agreement is reached. Replacement of garbage totes will begin October 23rd and will continue through October 30th for the city's new trash provider. Letters have gone out to residents with instructions for obtaining an additional tote or a recycling tote. The next article comes from the Arcola City Council, "No More Burning Leaves on Arcola City Streets," by David Porter. Under actions taken Monday night, Arcola City employees will be able to opt out of their health insurance plan and will share the savings to the city. Bill Wagoner, city administrator, explained that employees will have to show that they have credible insurance coverage elsewhere to opt out of the city's plan. Under the new rule, such employees will receive $260 per pay period, up to $6,700 per year. Also Monday, the city council approved payments and change orders for several city projects, some of the large increases in costs. The Main Street Improvement Project was well over budget, with several unforeseen issues cropping up. Construction costs jumped nearly $50,000, with another $119,000 in additional items added. Council approved a change order for the project in the amount of $142,000 and a pay request of $369,000. The Finance Committee met after Monday's council meeting and approved moving $167,000 out of the tax increment finding, TIF, funds to cover the cost overruns. The council will need to approve the transfer at an upcoming meeting. The Lipman Truck Route Project had two change orders. One increased cost $3,800, while the other reduced cost $25,000, Wagoner said. The reduction was due to a decrease in materials needed for the project. A final pay request of $109,000 was approved. The council approved changes to its municipal code. The primary purpose was to ban leaf burning on city streets. Residents may continue to burn in barrels or backyard fire pits. The city purchased a leaf vacuum from the city of Tuscola, which prompted the ban on burning leaves on the street. Council also approved a 50-cent-per-hour raise for Aaron Wood, water operator apprentice, following his completion of additional training. The council approved the TIF report, which included a storefront rebate for Jeff and Tony Fischel for the Woodshed Fitness Center. The rebate is to help pay for parking lot expansion. The council also approved its annual agreement with Coles County Regional Planning and Development Commission for technical services. Wagoner said the cost is an hourly rate not to exceed $2,500 for the year. Engineers Milano and Grunlow reported the city did not receive a grant for reconstruction of Bob King Drive and Egyptian Trail. The city had sought $5 million grant. Other grant programs may be available if the city chooses to pursue them. The next article, Villa Grove School Board approves abatements, discusses enrollment, by Ben Crane. The Villa Grove Community Unit School District 302 Board of Education approved all action items on its agenda Monday night during its regular October meeting. Board members voted to approve two bond abatements for the upcoming tax year. The first was for the district's 2019A general obligation bonds in the amount of $296,000, and the second for the 2024A general obligations bonds totaling $232,000. Both abatements apply to the 2025 tax year payable in 2026. The board also approved the minutes from its September 15th meeting, closed session minutes, payment of bills, and the district treasurer's report. During the superintendent's report, Superintendent Carol Munson said the district received two quotes for the replacement of its digital sign in front of the school. The quotes frame from Monitor's sign of Charleston and Bendenson's sign of Decatur. Munn also announced that the district will transition its sports streaming service from NFHS Network to HUDL beginning with the upcoming basketball season. In a safety update, Munson reported that the district does not currently have a full-time school resource officer because the city is down one police officer. She said Police Chief Tibbetts will provide daytime coverage at the school until a new officer is hired and trained, at which point the SRO will return full-time. The board also reviewed enrollment projections, athletic participation numbers, and a cooperative agreement as a discussion item. No actions were taken. The next main page story, Sarah Bush Lincoln begins $5.2 million expansion of Tuscola Health Clinic, by Ben Crane. Sarah Bush Lincoln has broken ground on a $5.2 million expansion of its Tuscola clinic. A project officials say will be more than double the size of the facility and significantly broaden health care access for Douglas County residents. The expansion will add nearly 10,000 square feet to the clinic, increasing its total footprint from 6,700 square feet to 16,717. The new space will include dedicated areas for cardiology, orthopedics, and full physical and occupational therapy gym, with room to grow for additional specialties in the future. Construction began last week and is expected to take about 12 months to complete. "We're excited to expand our services in Tuscola and continue investing in this community," said Kim Uphoff, president and CEO of Sarah Bush Lincoln. "This project reflects our ongoing commitment to improving access to high-quality health care close to home." Sarah Bush Lincoln Director of Communications Jenny Osborne said the expansion was identified during strategic planning last year, long before any recent developments in the region. "This project has been planned for quite some time," Osborne said. "Was identified about a year ago in our strategic planning. We saw the need for these services in the Tuscola area, in Douglas County, and even beyond." Among the new offerings, Osborne said, will be dedicated cardiology and orthopedic spaces, along with an expanded therapy wing. "The expansion will include areas for cardiology, orthopedics, and a physical and occupational therapy gym," she said. "We're also designing it with the idea that there'll be room for more specialties in the future." Sarah Bush Lincoln recently began offering electrophysiology and cardiology services in Tuscola with the addition of Dr. Abraham Cockerell. The expansion will provide him and his team with a permanent dedicated space. Orthopedic service will also have full-time physicians stationed at the clinic, allowing patients to receive pre- and post-operative care locally, followed by physical therapy in the same building. Osborne added that the project is designed to benefit not just Tuscola, but the entire region. "Our goal is really Douglas County in general, Tuscola, Arcola, Villa Grove, and Arthur," she said. "We have primary care in Arcola and Arthur already, so we'll definitely see an impact in those areas. Some patients may even come from further north in Champaign County." Osborne credited local leaders for their involvement in the recognizing the need for expanded health care access. "We do have Dale Boyer on our board, and he's involved with the Douglas County Economic Development Committee," she said. Mayor Dan Kleiss was also part of the discussions early on, as we were identifying the community's need. Kleiss said the project marks another major investment in Tuscola's future. "We are thrilled that Sarah Bush Lincoln continues to invest in Tuscola," Kleiss said. "The addition of new services and expanded space will make a real difference for our residents and demonstrates SBL's strong commitment to the future of our community." The Tuscola Clinic currently offers primary care through Dr. Kim Whitaker and nurse practitioner Casey Helfrick, along with a walk-in clinic services. Internal medicine physician Dr. Kavitha Rahman will join the team in December to further expand access to care. Sarah Bush Lincoln officials said the expansion reinforces their long-term commitment to investing in the health and vitality of the Tuscola area and ensuring residents have access to advanced medical services close to home. "This is about meeting people where they are," Osborne said. "We want to make it easier for our patients to get to the care they need without having to leave Douglas County." The next article is from the Douglas County Board, Routine Business by Ben Crane. The Douglas County Board had almost no business for their four-minute meeting on Wednesday this week. The board approved last meeting's minutes, payments of the county's financial obligations, and reports of fees of county offices. There were no subcommittee reports, any new business, or executive session. The next meeting is on November 19th at 9 a.m. And the final first page story, Embracing the Odd, Annual Market Showcases Music, Creative Arts, Live Tattooing by Ben Crane. What began as an idea among artists and Oddfellows Lodge members has evolved into one of Tuscola's most distinctive events, and this year's Odd Market proved that the creative spirit fueling it isn't slowing down anytime soon. Now in its seventh or eighth year, the Odd Market has grown into a signature showcase for art, music, and local culture, all organized by members of the Oddfellows Lodge above Vintage Karma on Sale Street. For Ainsley Heilick, owner of Vintage Karma and one of the event's founders, it's also a reflection of how creativity and community can intertwine. "Last year was the first time we introduced the tattoo component," Heilick said. "It just seemed like a natural fit. We did a smaller test run so we could learn how to navigate the state licensing for a tattoo event, and this year we were able to scale it up and it worked out really well." More than 60 vendors signed up for this year's event, with roughly 50 setting up before rain arrived later in the day. Many have been returning vendors for years, while others came for the first time, drawn by the mix of handmade art, food, and live entertainment that has become synonymous with the Odd Market. The event is our primary fundraiser for the lodge, and it's also our main generator of membership, Heilig said. Since last year went so well, people joined and wanted to get involved, which has helped us expand it even more this time. As a lodge, we've made up a lot of artists and creative people, he added. There are lots of things groups can do to raise money, and we don't want to be constantly asking people to buy raffle tickets. We wanted to create something cool, a community event that gives artists opportunities and helps promote Tuscola and the Odd Fellowship at the same time. The tattoo portion of the market has quickly become one of its biggest draws. Lines formed hours before the first designs went on skin, and more than 300 tattoos were completed throughout the day. Heilig said the setup ran much smoother than last year thanks to added organization and experience. All of the artists were able to work on their own space, and we still get through everyone, he said. It was great seeing people line up that early, and the feedback from the tattooers has been really positive. It gave them a sense of community you don't always find in this industry. A portion of each tattoo's proceeds went toward event costs, with the remainder benefiting area libraries in Tuscola, Villa Grove, Thomas Brough, and Rantoul. We wanted to support the libraries in towns where our members live, Heilig said. A lot of them have been impacted by grant losses, and this was a way to give back directly to the places that matter to our members. While the Independent Order of Odd Fellows is one of the oldest fraternal organizations in the country, Heilig said its Tuscola chapter reflects a new generation of members, younger, creative, and community-driven. Most members of the older generations are in their 80s, but the newer generations, Gen X and younger, tend to be more tattooed, more artistic, he said. People are looking for community and ways to do projects that make a difference. It's not just about hanging out, it's about building on something. It just kind of happened naturally, he said. I didn't set out to start a lodge where everybody's tattooed, but we're above a tattoo shop. I'm a tattoo artist, so it just attracts that kind of creative energy. That sense of purpose has helped the group redefine what Odd Fellowship can look like today. The lodge's influence has even reached statewide. Heilig was recently elected Grand Warden of the Illinois Odd Fellows, making him the third in line to lead the state organization. It's pretty exciting, he said. Our Grand Master this year is the first female to hold the position in Illinois. We're breaking ceilings and the demographic is starting to change. It's about progress. For Heilig, sustainability is the key to keeping the odd market thriving long-term. The goal isn't to make it biggest or most profitable festival in the region. It's to make sure it remains meaningful and manageable. It's about doing the thing, he said. It's not necessarily about the numbers. It's about keeping it fun and sustainable so people don't burn out. Events like this take people a lot of work, but they bring people together, and that's what matters. As the Odd Fellows look ahead to next year's market, one thing is certain: the creative current running through the historic lodge and Tuscola itself is alive and well. We'll go now to the obituaries. Peggy Dorothea Harmon, 75, of Arthur, died Sunday, October 19, 2025, at Carl Hospital in Urbana. Funeral services are incomplete, and Schrader Funeral Home Arthur is assisting the family with arrangements. Robert Lee Van Cleve, 101, of Tuscola, passed away on Thursday, October 16, 2025, surrounded by his family at his residence. Funeral services were held Sunday, October 19, at the Edwards Funeral Home, Arcola. The Reverend Tony Crouch officiated. Burial followed in the Arcola Cemetery. Visitation was held prior to the service on Sunday at the funeral home. Phyllis Ann Mickety, 94, beloved wife, mother, grandmother, and friend, passed away peacefully on September 27, 2025, at Kendall at Longwood in Kennett Square, Pennsylvania, surrounded by her family. A celebration of life will be held on Sunday, November 2nd, 2 p.m., at Kendall at Longwood, 1109 East Baltimore Pike, Kennett Square, Pennsylvania. Elaine L. Swiater passed away peacefully at home on Saturday morning, October 4, 2025. Cremation rites were entrusted to Renner Wyckoff Chapel, Urbana. A memorial service will take place at 10 a.m. on October 24th at Renner Wyckoff Chapel, 1900 South Phyla Road, Urbana, followed by a graveside service at 11:30 a.m. at Locust Grove Cemetery, Philo. Barbara Jean Molson Trower, 90, of Lovington, passed away on Monday, October 13, 2025, at Eberhardt Village in Arthur. Graveside services were held Saturday, October 18th, at Arthur Cemetery, Arthur. As per Barbara's request, there were no visitation. Memorials were made to the Eberhardt Village Activity Fund, St. Jude, or Sarah Bush Lincoln Hospice. The McMullen Young Funeral Home was in care of the arrangements. Carlos Galvan Lira, 57, of Arcola, passed away at 9:43 p.m. on Tuesday, October 14, 2025, at Carl Foundation Hospital in Urbana. A massive Christian burial was held Friday, October 17th at St. John the Baptist Catholic Church in Arcola. Father Michael Trummer officiated. Burial was in the Arcola Cemetery. Visitation was held prior to the funeral at the church. The Edwards Funeral Home assisted with arrangements. There's another article, Haunted Locations Guide for East Central Illinois by Ben Crane. As Halloween approaches, Douglas County residents don't have to look far for a few good ghost stories. Several nearby sites have gained reputations for unexplained activity, unusual architecture, and long-standing folklore that continues to draw attention every fall. The Chesterville Cemetery, the Witch's Grave. Just a few miles north of Arcola, it's one of the most talked-about graves in East Central Illinois. Chesterville Cemetery is the home of what locals call the Witch's Grave, a burial site surrounded by an iron fence with a large oak tree growing directly through it. According to local legend, the woman buried there was accused of witchcraft more than a century ago. The fence, it said, was meant to contain her spirit while the tree was planted to hold her down. Over time, the trunk has swallowed the bars entirely, creating one of the most distinctive grave sites in the region. No record of a witch trial or execution in Chesterville has ever been found, and historians generally view the story as folklore. Still, the imagery of a tree and fence locked together above a single grave has helped the legend endure. St. Omer Cemetery. In Ashmore in Coles County lies another grave with a similar reputation. St. Omer Cemetery is known for the tall monument of Caroline Barnes, who died in 1882. Her headstone is topped with a glass orb that some visitors claim glows under the light of the moon. Over the years, rumors have circulated that Barnes was accused of witchcraft and placed a curse on the town before her death. Historians have found no evidence to confirm these claims, but the odd glow of the monument, likely caused by reflected light, continues to feed speculation. Interestingly, her death date is marked as February 31, 1882. It is said to be a preventative measure as witches come back on the day of their death date. St. Omer has become a popular spot for ghost tours and amateur investigators who consider it one of Illinois' most photographed haunted cemeteries. Ashmore Estates. A short distance away on the outskirts of Ashmore stands one of the region's most recognizable haunted landmarks, the Ashmore Estates, which was built in 1916 as the Coles County Poor Farm before being converted into a psychiatric hospital. It closed in the late 1980s and has since been restored and reopened for historical and paranormal tours. Visitors have reported doors slamming, footsteps echoing through empty hallways, and voices coming from the upper floors when no one is there. The site has been featured on national television shows, including The Ghost Adventures and Destination Fear. While the stories have never been proven, the county records confirm that dozens of residents died on the property during its decades of operation, giving weight to the eerie atmosphere that surrounds the aging brick building. Pemberton Hall. In nearby Charleston, Eastern Illinois University's Pemberton Hall carries one of the state's oldest campus ghost stories. Built in 1909, it remains Illinois' oldest women's dormitory and has been associated for more than a century with a matron named Molly Hawkins. According to campus legend, Hawkins continued to patrol the halls after death, checking rooms and watching over students as she once did in life. The story began in the early 1900s and has persisted through generations of EIU students. University officials acknowledge the legend as part of campus tradition, though they note that Pemberton's activity today is more likely caused by late-night studying than supernatural events. Harrison Street Inn. In Sullivan, the Harrison Street Inn adds a lighter note to the region's haunted folklore. The century-old building, which operates as a small inn, is said to have experienced occasional footsteps, flickering lights, and doors that open on their own. Former owners and guests have described the activity as harmless, suggesting the spirits remain, but they're attached more to the building's long family history than to any tragic event. The inn's long-standing presence and preserved architecture make it a frequent mention on the Illinois ghost hunting routes. Folklore and local identity. Together, these sites form a map of local superstition that stretches across the quiet prairies of East Central Illinois. While historians tend to view the stories as products of imagination and coincidence, the legends themselves have become part of the region's identity. Each October, travelers and residents alike visit these places out of curiosity, reflection, or tradition. From Chesterville's iron-fenced oak to the looming halls of Ashmore Estates, the stories endure because they connect history, mystery, and the enduring appeal of a good ghost tale. The next article, Illinois pork producers explored trade potential in South Korea, Tuscola farmer part of the U.S. delegation by Rhiannon Branch. A recent trip to South Korea to strengthen trade relationships is fresh on the minds of Illinois Pork Producers Association, the IPPA president Josh Mashoff, as he celebrates National Pork Month. There aren't enough positive attributes I can throw out there that would describe how awesome the trip was. It was just a wealth of knowledge, Mashoff told Farm Week about the trip he attended last month with the U.S. Meat Export Federation representing the National Pork Board. On the same trip was Tuscola farmer Dan Meyer, representing corn growers. Meyer is a member of the Illinois Corn Marketing Board, which helps fund the Meat Export Federation. I gained perspective seeing how the Korean people and how one of U.S.'s larger international consumers use our products. The culture of how they use that product and it gets to their consumers is significantly different, Mashoff said. Mashoff said that South Korea is about the size of Indiana, but with a dense population of about 52 million. With less open land, people there don't have as many opportunities to grow their own food, and those living in high-rise buildings are working with small kitchens and inconvenience traveling to eat out. Right now, Korea is driving a huge sector called home meal replacement, he said. It's about trying to take the different segments of your balanced meal and build them into a one-step shop package that might be pre-cooked or easy to cook at home with delivery service to the door. They love American beef and pork, Meyer said. Korean meat is in short supply and expensive, he said. The Koreans prefer the taste of American beef and pork. South Korea is the third largest export destination for U.S. pork muscle cuts, reaching $422 million through July of 2025. Belly is a cut Koreans prefer, but U.S. demand for bacon makes it harder to get, so the country is thinking outside the box. They've done some very unique things like slicing the shoulder very thin and smoking it to get not quite the same texture, but the flavor and experience of bacon, Mashoff said. It was educational for us, but it was also about building relationships because having personal connection means a lot to them from a customer to consumer standpoint. The group visited food services and real retail locations, including Costco and E-Mart, toured the Port of Busan, and key importing companies such as Fresh Easy, Frank Burger, and Highland Foods. The CEO of Highland Foods specifically wanted to host the team to build a relationship directly with U.S. farmers because their customers are demanding the quality and taste of U.S. pork and beef. They very much appreciate and have an alignment with the U.S., looking at the U.S. as a very sustainable source of their beef and pork, Mashoff said, noting a recent poll that showed 70% of the population considers the U.S. positive or favorable. They see U.S. labels on the products in their stores, and that carries a lot of weight. Mashoff said the trade is top in mind for him as 30% of U.S. pork is exported. The rhetoric between countries and potential trade impact barriers can really affect the price on the market, and long-standing relationships between free access countries can be challenged, he said. I think it's important that we continue to look at how we get free trade agreements with each of these external countries. That's really going to impact demand much greater than anything we think we can do on the domestic side. The Mashoffs work with about 350 production partner families to raise about 3 million market hogs a year. Mashoff said favorable hog prices and lower feed costs are highlights of hog production this year, but there are some headwinds, including other inflationary costs and animal disease threats. He said it's beneficial to have a month that focuses on promoting pork. What these farmers are doing on an everyday basis really allows us to promote and show some appreciation to the group that's out there getting it done every day, Mashoff said. The trip to South Korea was the third farm marketing mission Myers has been on. The work has taken him to Thailand and Vietnam as well. He said it's special to him because his dad, the late Wayne Meyer, was also on the Corn Marketing Board and made trips to Bulgaria, Russia, and the Ukraine in the 1990s to promote American ag products. Meyer said the 7/8 cents of a sale for every bushel of corn in Illinois goes to the Illinois Corn Growers and Marketing Board. He said they support the meat producers because they rely on corn for feed. The more meat that is produced means more sales for corn. The more feed, fuel, and fiber uses help our sales, he said. He added that it's unbelievable what they've built there in regard to the Port of Busan. They can handle the largest ships in the world and serve as a hub for Southeast Asia. With China reducing its reliance on U.S. farm products, opening up new pipelines is especially important. He noted that China's reduction in U.S. imports has been years in the making, long preceding recent tariffs. He said China's been investing in infrastructure in Brazil for years to enable it to port more ag products from Brazil. Meyer said the only touristy thing the group did was a trip to the DMZ between South Korea and North Korea. That is all we have time for this week. This is Chris Yerkes saying goodbye and see you again next week.